Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Mattson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. A lot going on in the news today, except for what actually happened in Afghanistan. That story has completely disappeared. And if you watched 60 Minutes on Sunday night and you saw their piece in Afghanistan, you'd think there was no Americans over there. They didn't choose to spotlight it. We are today. We've got the chairman of the board of SaveOurAllies.org, Chad Robichaux. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Did I get the last name right?
You did. You nailed it.
Come on.
I know you thought you were going to mess it up, but you got
first time in 1,000 shows.
You practiced for like half an hour before
this. I did in the mirror over and over and over again. I was nervous. This guy's a fucking badass. Mm. I mean, some of the crazy shit you've done, if you didn't listen to the Tim Kennedy episode, we'll get into it today, but you were the guy that he couldn't talk about who was swimming over a river every single night back into Afghanistan. Was that true?
That was it. I don't know what I was doing out there, but I mean, at 46 years old, I wish some of our service members could have been allowed to go. I know they wanted to, but because they couldn't, you know, we did.
Sure. Yeah. So let's start from the beginning of all of this. When Biden announced that, you know, he was going to pull our troops effectively, city gets overtaken in what, 2 days?
Yeah, like 2 days. It happened faster than I thought it would. I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't think it would happen that fast.
And then how did you get involved afterwards?
Well, I actually got involved before. I was watching, you know, President Biden's, you know, speeches, and he was saying he was going to make the withdrawal. And so I did 8 deployments as part of JSOC Task Force. I was a 4th Recon Marine. Went over to JSOC and deployed in a very unique capacity as an AFO, Advanced Force Operator, going out and doing clandestine logistics, putting, you know, our soldiers on target. And really, because of my job, I didn't have like an interpreter, mm-hmm. like a normal big unit would. I had an interpreter attached to me that ended up being my teammate. And his name was Aziz, and we operated together all throughout Afghanistan, Pakistan. And if we wasn't operating in the mountains or villages, we were at his house. Right. I went back on base. I was living in his house and eating dinner with his family, playing soccer with his kids. Like, he was my brother. I love this guy. And he saved my life multiple times, and had been trying for 6 years to get him through the SIV process, mm-hmm. which was failing because it's a broken system. And so I'm watching President Biden say that he's going to pull the troops out. And I'm like, I have to go get my friend. I can't let him be left there. His wife and his six kids be left there, and I have to go get him. So I called Dan Stinson, and we worked together, and Tim talked a lot about Dan Stinson. We mm-hmm. worked together in Afghanistan on our task force. And we're like, we're going to go get Aziz. So we start putting some money together, a plan together. And I start calling all the guys I trusted to do this that had ASO, AFO experience, had been in Afghanistan. And one of those guys was Tim Kennedy. And I said, well, I'm going to go get Aziz. Tim was on board. This is like 3 months before the withdrawal. And so we're planning. And as we got closer and seen things speeding up, we started expediting our plan. And one of our team members, another guy named Sean, I don't want to say his last name, but he's worked at OGA and a paramilitary unit. And he's like, hey, there's 3,500 orphans that are going to be left there. If we're going to go get Aziz and his family, let's get these orphans too. And it kind of expanded to where we were like, okay, this is bigger than Aziz. There's going to be a lot of people that need help. Let's really put some effort behind this. And I contacted Sarah Verardo, who you guys know.
Mm-hmm. She was in the
show. We started putting together an effort, and we knew we would need government support, and we wouldn't get it from our government. So we went to the UAE, and one of our team members had a personal relationship with the royal family. And we just said, hey, this is what we want to do. This is who we are. We have the capabilities to do this. Even though we're just 12 of us, mm-hmm. we can pull this off. We just need some support. And so they gave us two C-17 planes, pilots. They gave us an airstrip to land and take off from, mm-hmm. let us set up a jock there, Joint Operations Center, and gave us access to the humanitarian center. So like, a humanitarian center is essential on something like this, because you don't think about, I didn't think about things like this. You're going to take out pregnant women that are going to need that babies mm-hmm. and medical care and counselors and food and all the stuff that they're going to need. They were able to provide, everything. Yeah. They were able to provide all that for us. And so we pulled the trigger when we got to Abu Dhabi to initiate this. And I know when Tim was on, we couldn't say some of the stuff I'm saying now.
Sure.
We can now. When we got there, we didn't know how much time we were going to have. We didn't know if we had a day or a month. We just knew we had to do it fast, because people, every minute was going to be people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so we just did it as much as we could, 24/7. Like, Tim was on the ground team, going outside the airport, and we were just moving. I mean, those guys, no one slept. It was literally like half an hour here, hour there, like maybe once a day. And we ended up having 10 days. And in that 10 days, we were at 12,500 Americans, SIVs, family members.
That you were able to save and get out?
We were able to get out to Abu Dhabi.
Okay. And let me ask you this. Because this I hadn't heard before.
Yeah.
You knew 3 months in advance that shit was going to go bad. How come our government and the President of the United States did not know that?
They knew.
Well, they knew. I mean, every general so far has intimated that and shown some evidence to the effect that they knew well in advance. And to his point, I've been saying this since this began. This didn't happen overnight. Like, right. These guys were planning these exfils months in advance, because the Taliban uprisings that began in April and May, by the time this shit started in August, I think about 60% of the country was already controlled by the Taliban.
That's right.
So it wasn't new. And that was at the point, 60% of the country is controlled by the Taliban. They're on the active push towards things. We're seeing assets on the ISIS and Al-Qaeda side that haven't been relevant in years, all of a sudden come back into the fold with the Taliban, and the Biden administration decides to pull what is our most important resource, which is air superiority.
That's right.
Bagram Air Base. Like, this is, I'm sure we've all heard the phrase women and children first. And I'm not, I don't mean this in a demeaning way, but the people that are there unarmed without fucking government support or military support, those are the women and children. They're under no circumstances does the security element leave before the fucking non-security element is gone.
Yeah.
We've never ever done that before. Even in Vietnam, we didn't fuck it up that bad.
No. Yeah. Anybody who's paying attention, you could even, I did media all the way up to it because I was speaking about the SIVs. Mm-hmm. Folks, I did media all the way up to it, say this is going to happen. Like, this is happening. We need to get our SIVs out. And by the way, like, a lot of people have said that this was an endless war. We knew we had to leave. It just needed to be done the right way. And I'm one of the people that would disagree with that, because I don't believe this was an endless war. If you really look at Afghanistan, 2 years ago, we stopped fighting conventionally. We were supporting and advising the Afghan National Army and Afghan National Police, and it was working. We were keeping the Taliban at bay. The war on terrorism was kept in the mountains of Afghanistan, not in the Western civilization. And so that process was working. So for President Biden to say that we had to move 2,500 troops out, or 4,000 troops at a time out, because we didn't want Americans dying anymore. Mm. It's just such BS. Because,
well, no American had died since Trump made the agreement with the Taliban the year prior.
Exactly.
Just to be clear about that whole fucking thing.
And, I mean, they look at Japan. We have 80,000 troops in Japan and 40,000 in Germany and 30,000 in South Korea. So why 4,000 in Afghanistan was so urgent? This was, you know, a very intentional decision to pull our troops out of the most strategic place on the globe. It sits Bagram Air Force Base, but sits between Iran, Iraq, Russia, China, all those places, to pull that out and not have the world's consent, because no one talked to Britain, no one talked to Germany, no one talked to the other nations of the world that
even
were all
France.
Participating.
I mean, when you guys were over there running, and we'll get into all the crazy bullshit you guys were doing, but when you guys were doing that, it seemed like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the only active military shit going on outside the wire was France, right?
Yeah, well,
or they may be the couple of the countries, but
France,
primarily,
Britain, Germany were flying out to get their people.
Yeah,
and yeah,
but France was helping with some non-French stuff as well.
Yeah.
But it's like, we weren't doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, we had like the Georgians doing patrols and stuff like that, because my son went to Afghanistan, who was embedded with the Georgians as an Anglican Marine, and so I mean, but yeah, the U.S. service members, I mean, it was support and advisory role at that point.
And what was wrong with the Afghan police and their military that there seemingly there was no defense once we decided to pull out and they just got steamrolled? It appears
air superiority. I mean,
explain that to the audience.
Well, Tim made this point the very first time he was ever on Drinking Bros. I think it was like April or May of 2017 or some shit like that. That the American warfighters specifically has never been engaged in a conflict in our lifetime where we didn't have air superiority. Like that, it has been the case since World War II. You know what I mean? So you take that away. The reason that guys like JSOC, all the fucking tier one and tier two organizations are able to operate in 4, 6, 12 man teams is because phone calls get fucking air assets on station and lighting people up and creating standoff or exfil routes or whatever the fuck else it is. You take that away, and now you're that is a force multiplier. It makes your 12-man team equal to that of a company size, essentially, right? So 12 versus 140.
I mean, the last 20 years, we've been putting JTACs, like used to be like, we had an air officer in a unit. Now we even conventional like infantry units are sending out people to JTACs where they can control air. When my son Hunter went to Afghanistan, he, as an Anglican Marine, he was embedded with the Georgians. That's why he was embedded with the Georgians, to give them U.S. air superiority when they went out to be able to call air. And you know, the Taliban have not only had that, but have been accustomed to having that for the last 20 years. And, you know, one of the things that there's a lot of things that President Biden said that just made my blood boil. But one of the things that made my blood boil the more than anything else, and this is my point where I'll defend the Afghan people. He said, how can we help people that won't defend themselves? Which is such BS, because 66,000 Afghans died in the last 20 years defending their country. These are like the guys that the Afghans that I met, and I was there and President Biden wasn't. The Afghans I met were most brave and courageous, like patriots, fighting for their country, fighting for their daughters to be able to go to school, to the point where 66,000 of them died. That's like equivalent of our civil war based on like just the population. Like, I mean, they were fighting for their country. You know, it wasn't their fault. We abandoned them with no notice and set them up for failure.
What was the excuse out of the White House for pulling air support? Like, what's the thinking and decision behind that to pull that as well? Because to me, that doesn't really take a lot of troops, but you would know better than I would.
Yeah.
What's the decision behind that? Because couldn't you fly in from another country and just keep nuking people?
Yeah, well, you certainly could fly in from another country. I mean, but to me, like my position, the best answer I have for that question is we should never have given up Bagram Air Force Base. You know, President Trump was in negotiations to withdraw from Afghanistan and downsize, but Bagram Air Force Base was going to become an international base.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the U.S. base. It was going to become an international base, and we would have still had presence there.
Got it.
And the White House has never been able to explain why. The Joint Chiefs advised the president not to. All the intelligence agencies advised the president not to. Yet he went against all the advice of all of his military advisors and did it anyway. And not only did he do it, but he did it in a way that was so horrific. And just like you had said earlier, he moved the military out before the civilians, before our allies, and he didn't inform anyone. And that's why we still have Americans there right now, because they thought they were, you know, they're aid workers. And people are like, who are these Americans there? They're aid workers. They're people who care and have passion to teach school and provide medical care and build roads and reconstruction. And they're really passionate. And you got the White House and the President of the United States saying, it's going to be okay. You guys are going to be safe. This is an emergency. We will not leave any Americans behind. And so they stayed until they found out, hey, did you hear? They probably showed up at work and, hey, did you hear? The military left Bagram Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And then the Taliban is watching the Taliban close in quickly. And I promise you, because I've been in the room before, there's like rooms like this where television screens are all over, people watching satellites, and you're seeing the Taliban coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that notice was not given to anyone. And now,
well, as a matter of fact, when Hamid Karzai called Biden and like, hey, did you guys abandon Bagram? And Biden told him, like, no, we didn't do that.
Yeah. No, like, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is kind of weird. I mean,
CENTCOM spun up. And was going to drop the 82nd back on Bagram to re-seize it, and the White House shut it down. This is not conspiracy either. This is public knowledge. CENTCOM spun up. They're going to jump the 82nd back on to reclaim it because the Taliban was moving there, and our equipment was there, $85 billion worth.
Yeah.
And technology, and the White House shut that down, and they said, we don't need two air bases. We already have HKIA. And then one of the biggest mistakes, if there wasn't enough, was that the White House gave the NEO, which is non-combatant evacuation operation, they gave it to State Department. Now, this is like me being told that I'm going to be a brain surgeon tomorrow. Like the State Department doesn't do NEO operations, a military operation. Non-combatant evacuation operation belongs to the military. They gave it to the State Department because they believe that the military had too much of a personal relationship with the Afghans after 20 right. years.
Yeah, and the last time, well, there's two times in recent memory where the State Department was given a job like that. One of them was Benghazi. Anybody remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple movies about it, I believe. Yeah.
It didn't go so well.
Did not go well. The other thing was at the beginning of the Iraq invasion, a bunch of State Department personnel were deployed to northern Iraq, like near the Tikrit area, to try to set up a base of operations. That did not go well. I don't know how much of that's classified or declassified, but the fact that it exists is out there. So, yeah, look into that sometime if you get a chance. But the State Department, man, it's like getting a plumber to come in and cook dinner for you.
Yeah.
Why in the fuck would you do that?
Yeah.
It tastes like shit.
Yeah, I mean, they treated the airport, if you watch it,
That was a pun.
Yeah, that was a pun. I let that hang for you.
Like,
there.
We're here to fucking appreciate what you do. You can't appreciate what he does?
I'll plunge it and move on. There's another one for you.
What was it?
It was a plumber joke.
It's too late now.
It was a plumber joke.
I'm not too sure.
No, it's fine. I'm up to my elbows in it now. Nailed it. I'll keep going if need be. In your estimate, how many Americans are still left over there?
I would estimate probably 2,000 to 3,000 Americans still there.
Jesus Christ, really?
When you say Americans, what do you mean? Because people, you mean people that have been through the SIV process or people that have gotten, permanent
LPOs would be green cards.
Yeah, green cards.
American citizens.
Right.
I wouldn't count SIVs because you count SIVs now you're getting into tens of thousands of people. But when you talk about, when I say Americans, I mean blue passport holding Americans.
Mm.
Now, whether they're, you know,
permanent residents,
Caucasian or they're Americans.
Yeah.
And then there's LPOs, which are green card holders, which, you know, when somebody gets a green card, we treat them like American citizen.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm talking about. And the White House say that these people don't want to come. We get the emails every day. The White House, if I'm getting those emails every day and seeing the videos, what's happening, the White House is getting them too. They know that people want to come. It's not true. And the argument between 3,000 or 10,000 or 200 is not an argument I even care about, because if there's just one American there, then we should use every bit of military might and strength to go get them. I mean, the community I come from, if there's an American somewhere, we will scorch the earth to go get them, even if we know we're going to lose team members. Even if they were an idiot and put themselves in a situation like Berdahl, like, we still go get them because it's the right thing that we do for Americans. And so it's not a matter of numbers. But if you want to go over to White House's numbers, they said 10,000, and then they said they got out 6,000, and then they said there's 200 left. I didn't get your joke like earlier.
Yeah.
I'm not good at math either.
No.
But I know that's not 200. It's like 4,000 something.
Yeah, it leaves about 3,800 on the table.
Yeah.
Give or take. Is there still planes going over there to grab people that are still left, or have those operations ended?
Not military plane, NGOs, like organizations like Save Our Allies are still working.
They're still working?
Yeah. I mean, we work with a lot of other organizations, Mercury One, Glenn Beck. I know Tim was talking a lot about that. They're Rudy Atala and Glenn and those guys there. I've been friends with Glenn for a long time. Those guys are incredible. And they spent about $26 million in planes. So a lot of our flights out that wasn't Abu Dhabi military flights were through on those planes, and they saved thousands of people's lives. And so we're moving out of remote parts of Afghanistan. We're still flying people out. You know, since that 12,500, we've got about another 3,000 to 5,000 people out. So we're somewhere between 15,000 and 17,000 people that we got out now.
I know that you served, and I know you were a contractor as well. Mm-hmm. When did you finish? What age did you finish?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember what age, but and I went in 93. I was in active duty till 2004, and in 2007 I stayed at my command, director contracted at my command.
So you hadn't been overseas in 14 years essentially.
Yeah.
So you were probably 32 years old.
That's right. Yeah, about around there, yeah.
Going back at 46. Was there any part of you that was just like, dude, I can't fucking do this?
Well, I not only did I not hadn't been there since April of 2007 when I left after 8 deployments, I had severe PTSD, debilitating panic attacks. I tried to kill myself in 2010. I still over the years, I run an organization now, Mighty Oaks Foundation, where you serve, you know, we've served thousands of warriors. I've spoken to over a quarter million active duty troops around the world on PTSD and anxiety and depression. And now I'm having to go back in this environment and test everything that I've been teaching for the last 10 years. And the truth is, over the last 10 years, I still have had battles with anxiety, depression. I've had panic attacks. I've been in the emergency room. My blood pressure is 200 over 130. So my mind starts spinning. I'm like, I feel this burden on my heart. And I'm a strong person of faith. And I'm like, man, I feel God to put this burden on my heart to go help these people. But am I going to get out there and deal with these panic attacks again? Am I going to be a liability to my teammates? Like, what's going to happen?
Get on the plane.
Yeah.
What's the flight like over there? Because I'm sure you remember your first time going over there.
Oh, yeah. My mind was spinning. And honestly, I believe, you know, I teach, you know, mind, body, spirit, social. That's the four pillars of resiliency. And, you know, when I went there the first time, I was mentally tough. I was physically tough. I had a strong social network in my team. My faith was pretty weak. And I believe that was the chink in my armor that let me crash. And now this time in my life, you know, my body's not quite what it used to be. In fact, 3 days before I left, I snapped my longest muscle of my groin off my bone, off the bone. I'm going there like a broken body, but I'm going anyway. My mind's, I hadn't done this in 14 years, like you said. I'm not, we have a team that we hodgepodge through together. And, but I really had a strong faith right now. And I just, for me personally, like, I'm on that plane and I'm like, God, you're calling me to go do this. I need you to take away any of these physiological symptoms. And I can tell you, like, I don't know if your audience and is with me on where I'm at, my Christian faith, but I can tell you that I never got tired. I never like had stress. I never had anxiety. I was working 23 hours a day, and I just felt focused and clear the whole time. And we did that first 10 days, you know, evacuation at the airport. The second trip, though, for me, going into that neighboring country, and I won't say what country I went into, but that Tim was talking about, I knew it was me and one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm not going in a controlled airport or military. I'm going out in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. I'm a land in a country I've never been in with a guy I never worked with. We're gonna travel about 12 hours in the mountains, and I'm gonna run into foreign militaries and foreign intelligence agencies, and I'm gonna swim across the river in Afghanistan to build routes out for people. When I got on that plane and started thinking about that, the stress came on, and anxiety came on, and that's when I luckily the guy I was going with, fellow Christian, and we prayed together, and we were like, man, you know, God, you gotta help us here.
You gotta do something.
And we felt good. We got on that last flight. We went in, and in 10 days we were able to do 90 miles of border reconnaissance. the environment there was crazy. We did not know, we didn't have the intelligence. We knew there was, we're probably gonna encounter some Chinese military as well as Taliban, of course. But we had another foreign military, I won't say because it'll tell what country I'm in. I was in we had Chinese military everywhere. And I don't mean just rock kicking, walking out of road infantry. There were those guys, but they were guys in ghillie suits with Dragunov sniper rifles, natural vegetation. There were special operations there. The Russian convoys everywhere. As soon as we got to the border, we go through 10 hours through the mountains and no cell signal. You know, going through mountains. You get to that border, which is super remote. And all of a sudden you have four bars on your phone. There's no cell tower out there, right? So now this is a Signet operation, trying to triangulate locations, and you start getting calls from Russia. So we had to shut all of our electronics down. We had an OGA contact, a CIA contact that was kind of monitoring us, and they said, shut down your electronics. And so now we're out there with no comms, no electronics. They were just checking in on our windows because they're trying to triangulate us. And literally, like, all on one side of the border were these Chinese, like, BMP mechanized vehicles with spotlights for the river and PKM machine guns on top and Russians everywhere. And on the other side, we're like, locating all the Taliban checkpoints. And then when the sun went down, we would swim across the river and gather all the information for people to cross. Because if you were like an Afghan on the other side hiding in a safe house and wanting to come across, you couldn't do it blindly. You don't know what you're going to run into. You might spend a whole week going through a valley with 25,000 foot peaks on both sides. And you get to the end of that after a week of dragging your family through there, and you have a cliff or a class 5 rapids river or a Taliban or Chinese checkpoint. So somebody has to paint that picture, how fast the water's going, how cold the water is, how deep it is. Where could you hide on this side? Where could you hide on that side? What's your route in? What's your route out? Those are called fording reports and just old school reconnaissance. And that's what we did.
Yeah. And you still, even after the fording reports, you still had to protect that information because I don't know how many fake documents were being passed around on the internet to lure people in. Like, oh, if you go to this location, you'll, and then they fucking light people up. There's a giant mechanism in play there that everybody needs to be collaborative on. And for the most part, it was, for lack of a better phrase, kind of, I don't know if it's illegal, but off book slice elements helping you guys do that shit. Not the actual government.
No.
But fucking off book slice elements. Yeah. I mean, that's fucked up.
You're right. That was active duty military.
Yeah.
Special operations guys. State Department guys, CIA people, NSA people, and these are true patriots, like, that have their conscience said, do the right thing, even though it's probably not the legal thing.
Right.
They you know, usually have, like, legal, ethical, moral.
Mm-hmm.
They did everything but the legal.
Yeah.
Because how could you, like, if you have the ability to go do, like, what we did, I have a lot of people have been asking me, like, why would we do that? Like, how could you, like, I don't know, I believe God orchestrated those opportunities for me. How could I not? Like, what if I told my wife, because my wife's, we were driving to the airport for the last, she's like, why are you going to do this again? Like,
I was just going to say, I asked Tim Kennedy the same thing. I said, what was the conversation like when you told your wife you were going
to
do this?
I don't think you married Tim Kennedy not expecting shit like this to happen,
right?
Frankly.
But for you.
I mean, me and my wife were 17 and 18 when we met. She saw me go to become a recon Marine and do all these training in schools, but she's just kind of like, that chapter's over. She's like, why you? Like, there's so many other people that can do this. And I'm like, I have the opportunity to do it. It's being kind of orchestrated that way. And it was fine until we were on a ride to the airport. She was dropping me off and then she was like super stressed and she kind of got upset. And I'm like, I just stopped her and I said, look, what if the situation was different? What if this was our family that was stuck out there? What if it was our daughter that was going to be raped or our sons that were going to be killed? Like, wouldn't you want somebody to come and get us, even if they didn't know us?
Yeah.
Like, I can't not do this. Like, you won't be able to live with me if I don't do this. I won't be able to live myself. Like, you won't. And I just knew I had to do it. And I don't
she
say,
was okay
I don't
with
say
it.
She was uncomfortable still. I mean, she knew we were going by herself. When I was an AFO, like, I did stuff like that, but a lot of the stuff she found out after.
Yeah.
And she was like, I can't believe you did that. Like,
and also there's no global awareness on most JSOC operations until 3-4 months later after the operation's done. But I think everybody kind of knew at that point after going into it, was like, all right, the U.S. government's incompetent, at least incompetent, if not actively trying to stop people from doing the right thing. So, you know, it is.
And there's some of that actively trying to stop
people. Oh, yeah, it's going on now. I mean, there's going to be some some legal shit that happens down the road because of this, but some of the stuff that happened to stop what you guys were doing over jurisdictional grievances, for lack of a better phrase, is those people need to lose their jobs forever once all this comes out. And we're going to name some names and so on and so forth. Fuck those people.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I'm getting a bunch of text messages now that says, as soon as you mentioned CIA, that it started glitching on YouTube. I hear you. I see you. Just know that. And that this has happened before. So it's not us on this one.
Sarah Verado, by the way, I know you guys are friends with her. Mm-hmm. She is a rock star, man. She keeps us out of trouble. Everything we do, like people listening and like worried about us getting in trouble, everything we do, she makes sure we're doing it legal. Like she'll like, you need to do this. Like here's a different, we make sure that we're cleared legally. Like that's all the OFAC rules and making sure we're not human trafficking people and all that stuff. We hadn't been even had a DOJ investigation yet because we make sure everything we're doing is legal. And now they keep changing rules, but she's on top of it constantly.
Well, what was your reaction to the blowback you took from some of the media and in particular some of these social media accounts?
Well, I mean, some of the stories that came out in the mainstream media were that there were rogue elements,
yes,
disrupting shit. And now you see this. If you didn't see it yesterday, the Afghan relocation and resettlement update from the office of the president, taking credit for all sorts of shit. I mean, they could not have fucked this up more. We've talked about this a million times, but now we've got some a JSOC dude on the show. The lowest level private in the military knows that this went wrong. As a matter of fact, people that have never served in the military knows, like the 82nd Airborne having to go back in there. That is a break in case of emergency thing.
Right.
That's DRF1. That's contingency. That's what I did. Like, that's not a plan. That is when things are fucked, that's your plan. So, I hear all these generals saying that, we tried to tell them and blah, blah, blah. Look, if I'm a fucking general officer and I'm telling people X, Y, and Z and about this particular situation and I'm getting ignored, I'll fuck my career. I'm going to the press. So, like, you cannot allow that shit to happen. As soon as I found out that, that they were planning to leave Bagram, but two, that he was lying to Karzai about it so he couldn't even prepare for it. Like, that's it. You go to the fucking press. Like,
meanwhile, conspiring with a terrorist organization.
Yeah. Your duty is to the country, not to the fucking president, not to his staff, not to politicians of any sort. Your duty is to this fucking country. But, you can't get promoted without the politicians.
Yeah, and let me ask both of you this. If you go to the press now, do they report it? Because right now, this story is dead over. It is done. We are out of Afghanistan. We are no longer talking about it. There is no more stories about Americans in Afghanistan. That is it. We've moved on.
Yeah, I could send, any news outlet, including conservative news outlets, like a story about, food, and they're gonna put it up because of my platform or whatever, or Tim could do the same thing. But if I send them something about 55 Americans being there, mm-hmm. or orphans or little girls, us having knowledge that little girls, 11-year-old girls, are already getting married to 55-year-old men as war trophies, they will not even respond to us. And so, and that's consistent across every media outlet. So
why is that? Even Fox News and things like that?
It's the new national shame, in my opinion. It used to be slavery, right? Mm-hmm. To some degree, it still is, but now we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that we spent two decades letting kids get raped because when in Rome, we didn't want to interfere with their culture.
Yep.
In reality, we should have started executing people that raped children immediately until they stopped. Like there's one thing, it's you can let different cultures behave different ways. Sure, people have different value systems and stuff like that. When you're raping children, you got to die, in my opinion. And that went on under our watch in Iraq and Afghanistan for years. People lost their careers trying to stand up to it, as a matter of fact, because the big army, big whatever, the military in general and the political class in America stopped them from dissenting about it because children were getting raped. And now we know why, right? Yeah, I mean, you see a new politician's name comes up or a new businessman's name comes up in connection with Epstein and Maxwell all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why, because it's their dirty little secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's happening at the bases, the safe harbors where we have people now. And in fact, we pulled out of one, and I can't say which one or when because there's an investigation going on right now. We pulled out of one because an Afghan man raped a kid, and the base commander would not investigate it, chose not to investigate it, sweep under the rug. And we called the state police and we reported it. And we took our staff off of that site, because that's not okay. And, you know, and the problem is, and this is one of the problems I'm worried about for us as slave allies and all the NGOs, is that the United States military, and I'm definitely not speaking to, against our military people, because they did what they were ordered to do. What I'm speaking about is the White House. They wanted numbers to evacuate Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So that whoever made it, the strongest survived, made it to those gates, they got let in. Many of those came right from the base, the Bagram Air Force Base jail that we let those prisoners out. They came right, the strongest survived, made it into that airport. They were not vetted. They were put on planes and flown right to America. Meanwhile, organizations like us, and you heard Tim talk about all the vetting that we had to get our people out. Yeah. Silverado is clearing our manifest with Joint Chiefs, and we're at Americans.
Challenging passes to identify the people and who they were. Yep. All this other research that went on, and we know the it's not the Tim Kennedy show.
Right. Bullshit.
Yeah, we know that line. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody that spoke bad about Tim doing that is just freaking morons. They had no idea. Like, I called Tim personally and asked him to come, not because he was popular. Because he's my friend and I could trust him, and he's got ASO level one, level two, level three experience. He's a scout sniper. He had exactly the skill set that I wanted on the ground to put that team together. It had nothing to do with his popularity. In fact, we didn't ever know any of this would get out. And, that's what he wanted. The only thing we were documenting was to make sure that we documented this, because it needed to be documented. But man, and you know, and then he's used his platform to help raise money for us.
Yeah, and he took a lot of heat for it. Not anymore. You know, I think people wised up pretty quickly of what was going on. And back to what you were saying about the 11-year-old trophy wives.
Yeah.
That was one part that 60 Minutes interview did cover on Sunday night.
Good.
Was they are, sounds crazy to say, they're in negotiations with the Taliban, some of the humanitarian people that are still over there, some of the aid workers. And they're saying, look, you've got to change your thinking and way of life, and you can't do this anymore. And they said, well, we're trying to adapt to the new world. That hasn't been a world for a very, very long time.
Right.
And so, you know, they've been able to save a few of them, but God knows how many are still going through this right now. And, you know, it would be great to have somebody like you on there to say, all right, here's what's actually going on. Because, you know, they'll interview the girl in school who was supposed to be married away, right. But there's millions of little more, girls out there.
20 million women. And, you know, where are all the Me Too people right now? Because, I mean, somebody needs to speak up for these girls. There's 20 million of them that's immediately identified. One of the first things Taliban did was asked all the imams, the mayors, essentially, for a list of girls from 14 to 54 years old. They wanted to know all of their names so they knew where they were. And I mean,
yeah, and there was one
that's their priority.
Yeah, there was one where they were offering families, especially big families, because there's a big starvation issue over there right now, where they're offering families $400 for their daughters, because they know in a family of eight, if you've got to feed that family, you're probably giving up the daughter to feed the other seven.
Yeah,
and that's still going on right now, but I'm sure it's so much worse when you got there. How much death did you actually see that was going on?
Well, you know, the guys that were on our ground team outside the airport, Tim and some of the other guys, those guys were the ones like seeing outside the airport. And it was, you know, from what they were saying, you know, I was in Abu Dhabi doing a lot of operations. It was horrific. You know, the little babies being brought to the fence and tossed over the fence, the people getting trampled. I was on the phone moving people to Tim and them. And, you know, when we kind of get like all the victory that everybody's hearing about it, all the people that we got out. But what people don't know is like the groups we were on the phone with moving that we didn't get. I had a group of like 350 kids that I had that was from an orphanage, and this orphanage worker was trying to move them to where Tim and Sean were. And I'm working all night to move them, and it didn't happen. And we just couldn't do it. And, you know, I got to take that paper, that list of humans, crumple it up and move on to the next group. And, you know, and it's hard to do that, 'cause you're like, these are people, like these are kids, like, and you were so invested in saving them. You just got to move on.
Does that haunt you when you get home?
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, like, especially 'cause everybody keeps patting our back on the numbers, and it's like, yeah, that's great. But what about this list of 350 people that I remember like taking that paper and like being pissed off and crumple it up and throw it down and move on to the next group. And it's like, yeah, it sucks.
So right now, currently, you said that there's still operations going on.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not as big as it was for the first 10 days when this all started. How many people on a weekly or monthly basis, because it's been a few months now,
right?
How many people would you say that they're currently getting out on a weekly or a monthly basis?
I think averaging about 300 a day.
Okay. Yeah. Well, look, that's hopeful at least.
Yeah. That's the operation. I mean, it could be all operations I don't know about because there's so many different people. And it's not, I was talking to a guy today on a drive up here, and there's no government like corralling all the groups together in one giant effort. So everybody's kind of independent. So the ones that I know about probably about 300 a day. And we have thousands in safe houses, and we're running out of money. These safe houses are not cheap because people are exploiting an opportunity.
Well, you got to pay the Taliban, right?
We're not paying the Taliban.
Okay.
We're paying people, and it happens. Now, if I pay the Taliban, DOJ will prosecute me. If I drive through a checkpoint and I have to pay the Taliban $20 to get through a checkpoint, the DOJ is going to go after and prosecute people. That the United States government could give them a country and give them $85 billion in equipment.
Yeah.
We can recognize them as a government.
We just sent a fucking pile of cash over there.
Yeah.
Well, but, that's why
but
I asked.
If I help for a safe house or if I give the Taliban some money to buy food for somebody, I'm paying a terrorist now. Are they a terrorist or are they a legitimate government? Because I'm confused because if the White House gives them money and I do, it's two different groups of people. It's
and that's why I ask. Like, yeah. I guess what's the difference? You know, like because it's coming from the White House, it's suddenly okay. It's the same barbaric group that's existed forever, and now we have to negotiate with them because they are a government.
Yeah.
They're technically the government of that country. And in order to get anything out of those fucks, there has to be some form of negotiation. So I wonder, to get these planes in and out, how do you do it without negotiating with the Taliban, without getting shot down?
Yeah, somebody is. And, you know, that somebody's not us directly.
Okay. And, well, we want the name and we want it now.
Yeah.
We want their social, we want their address. I'm kidding.
DOJ would be waiting outside downstairs for me.
Yeah, sure.
Do you ever think that this would be a movie? Because it sounds like a movie, like your description of it. It's so crazy. It seems like the Space Cowboys movie where it's just like, well, we're going on one last run to space as the astronauts. You guys all went back in your 40s, Palmisano, Tim Kennedy, like.
It needs to be a movie. And not that me and like me and Tim and Nick, we all have a lot going on. We don't need this for ourselves for any.
At all. And that's what I said to Tim. I go, why? Yeah. You have so much shit going on. Yeah. Why the fuck are you going to risk it all for this?
But it needs to be known. And so Tim just has his book release in Scars and Stripes. And the last chapter
May 22nd,
is about this. Yeah. And it's going to be awesome. Nick helped him write it. It's very lengthy. It's got a lot. I just signed a deal with Thomas Nelson, who's my publisher, and some other books. So and it's gonna be titled. We just nailed down a title. It's gonna be called "Rescuing Aziz." How the mission to save one turned into a calling to save thousands. And in that book, we're gonna talk about everything. I want all the truth and all this to be known about what the government did and didn't do.
Do you have to clear that with the DOD though? How does that work?
No, because he wasn't a DOD employee at the time.
Yeah. Got it. Tim is though.
Yeah, I'm sure Tim seems on top.
It's a hard process. We did it with Matt's book, and it was about 18 months. But it's interesting. Yeah, you won't have to go through that.
This one's gonna be a fast release. They're looking to release it in October, and and they're gonna put Thomas Nelson's a big publisher. They're gonna put a lot behind it, and it's gonna be global. You know, it's gonna go globally.
Yeah, because you've written five other books, right?
Yeah. Now all my other books are Christian books,
mm-hmm.
and Unfair Advantage is my client, like my story, And I have a marriage book coming out next month, by Thomas Nelson. But this one on Afghanistan will be my first non-Christian
book. Okay.
And so it'll just, you know, it's nothing about my faith and really just about, I mean, I'll talk about my own faith in there, like praying on an airplane going there, but it's not a evangelical Christian book. It's really just what happened, from me wanting to go help my friend to me calling Tim and Dan and Nick and putting everybody together and Sarah coming on and to us getting out, you know, so far 17,000 people, and whatever happens between now and the manuscript's in 3 weeks. Hopefully in there, that 55 Americans that we're working on today is, that's in that book, you know, so there'll be victories victories in between now and then. But all the policy stuff, all the stuff we talked about with the White House, all that's going to be in there because it needs to be.
Yeah, and one question I didn't ask Tim is, where do you put 17,000 people? Where do they go? What countries do they go? I know some have been relocated here. Yeah. There's been a couple.
Yeah, there's lily pads. Yeah. So it's like, you know, obviously hops, little hops.
But. So this is the main problem right now. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about earlier, and I kind of lost track. I was saying that all these people that the United States government brought here came into America and went to these 8 different bases around the country. These are unvetted people. All the real quality vetted people, the interpreters, the doctors, they are all in lily pad countries around the world. And for us, we brought everybody to Abu Dhabi in Albania. Me and Tim and Nick and our friend Joe, we brought a group to Albania. It's like all these lily pad countries. And because they can't stop us from rescuing people, the way the United States government and the State Department has stopped us is they won't move anybody from those lily pads to the United States. Because if they cleared out Abu Dhabi, for example, and they know, and it's no secret, I could say it here, like, if they cleared out Abu Dhabi and brought them all to America, man, we're ramping back up. We're going to get 12. We're going to fill that sucker up next week.
Yeah.
So they know that. So they're going to stop us by keeping people. And these countries are like, get these people. This is your problem. Now our country's taking care of them, and the State Department's not moving people. And instead, what's happening on these bases is you have the incidents like the little boy getting raped and all this stuff. These bad actors, and people are going to think it was us.
Yeah, the wrong people. It's all over the place. You keep hearing Fox, CNN talk about refugees that are making it here that have been unvetted. That's the government, like you said, entirely. As a matter of fact, I've got video of a certain airport in the Washington, D.C. area where people are fucking getting off planes being unvetted. Getting off planes, going to an unsecured fucking location that's basically a convention center, and then people are picking them up in Ubers and taking them places. Like, they've completely circumvented the SIV process, the immigration process, any kind of security check whatsoever. And I don't understand why. Like, that part doesn't make any sense to me. It could be garden variety incompetence in the beginning, but the fact that it's still happening, to me, screams something. It's the same thing as the southern border in America, right? People are being released into the country with on their own recognizance, with no way to contact them, no way to hold them accountable, or no vetting process to speak of. It's kind of a similar situation, and it begs the question: who's benefiting from this exactly?
Yeah,
like I don't believe in incompetence that persists. Incompetence in the short term I can accept, but incompetence that persists, there's motive behind that.
Yeah, this whole situation is. This whole situation is not incompetence. It was deliberate and intentional.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the way
I can't say the motive. I get my suspicions.
Do you know?
I have my suspicions. My suspicions is China. I mean, who benefits from all this? I mean, China. China wanted the Hindu Kush mineral rights because all the lithium's in the Hindu Kush minerals. Mm-hmm. I was saying this like 2 months before.
Dan's been saying this.
I've been saying that for 2 years. Yeah. And we had, what's his name, McChrystal on here. He was like, oh, there's not that much lithium. Like, dude, what are you, a fucking geologist now? Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Go suck Obama's dick somewhere.
Then, September 1st, the Taliban and China agreed.
Immediately started doing fucking, they're doing, what do you call those thermographic scans of the Earth. Anyways.
We still had jet fumes in there when they were coming there. And I mean, and then Russia's there. Iran and China. So China needs oil. Iran has oil. Iran can't sell their oil because of our trade embargoes, right, and the sanctions. And so now the only thing that sat in between Iran and China was Afghanistan, and U.S. military occupied.
Put a nice pipeline in there.
Or train it across. I mean, they're going. They're already doing it. We already know they were doing it. There's that, and then China and Russia won at Bagram Air Force Base. It's the most strategic place in the globe. Who put the lights on a Bagram Air Force Base? China did. I mean, there's a reason they were on that border I was on.
Are they still there?
Yeah, they're occupying Bagram Air Base now
as we speak.
Yeah,
yeah.
Again, no mention of this in the media.
No, nothing.
And it's when you say the media, a lot of people that watch our show immediately think of CNN and MSNBC, but there's no mention of it on Fox.
I'm talking nowhere.
There's no mention
nowhere.
Like you might hear
Drudge Report.
You might hear some stuff on Newsmax, but they're doing a vaccine mandate now and firing people for it too.
Yeah.
So let's not pretend like any of these assholes are okay.
Yeah.
Chris Wallace just flipped
to CNN. Like people don't give a fuck.
No.
People don't give a shit.
It's all the same. They're all controlled by whoever's controlling the narrative. But I mean, thankful there's outlets like this, right? That that could say what the truth. Mm.
And, yeah, we can say whatever we fucking want on this show, for Christ's sakes. What is the end game for the country of Afghanistan? What do you predict is going to happen over the course of the next 20 or 30 years?
You know, it's very difficult to predict because there's so many players involved. It's the country's not run by the Taliban like it appears right now. I mean, the country is being run by China, by Russia, and by Iran. That's in Pakistan, ISI. So they all have a vetted interest in that country. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think the fight's going to be between the Taliban. They're just allowing the Taliban the privilege of doing what they want. I think the fight's going to be between those countries and who's going to want territorial power over those countries. Mm. So that's what I foresee happening, because you can't have four countries like that play well together for too long.
No.
And then
where does that leave the Afghan people?
Well, it'll be a new insurgency, probably. Like, whichever.
Us or?
No. Okay. No.
We're never going back, right?
I mean, no, probably not. No, well, we'll have to do some stuff, but we're not going to like deploy a bunch of troops. We're not going to get into a hot war over that territory. This is not going to happen.
Right.
Unless you see something like what happened in the 1980s, like if China starts putting ICBMs or something there, now we got a problem, right?
Right. But
if it's just like ground troops and intel and fucking ops like that, you're not going to see honestly, it's going to turn into like an Iran situation where there's covert operations, mysterious explosions, things like that. But you can't conduct full on warfare like that. And the other issue with that is that now our strategic partners, remember what, not that I'm a fan of the guy, but remember what Trump was doing towards the end, his last year in his presidency, 5 peace deals between Israel and Middle East countries, mm-hmm. right? The richest Middle Eastern countries. I called that as soon as I saw the second one drop. I'm like, watch, he's going to pick off these other three. And he went after 5 of the top 6 Arab countries, the richest ones. And the other one was Iran. They're not going to fucking play ball.
No.
But pretty much the entire Arab world now was willing to play ball because they wanted to make money. They wanted to have good economies. They didn't give a fuck about all that old bullshit. Mm-hmm. And that was a very pointed effort by Trump to do that. And now we're seeing that all those people, it's going to be like the fucking submarine deal. We totally fucked France over on that. Why? To what end would we do that? It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's like all these things that were accomplished are immediately being peeled back because why? The why is what I want to know, right?
Yeah. Chad, I hate to interrupt you. We got some sponsors that pay for the show to be on the air. It's one of those shows where I hate to interrupt, and I'm sorry. Forgive me, but we got to keep the lights on somehow. GhostBed.com/drinkingbros. Finest mattresses in the land. Their adjustable bases are incredible. I'm hooked. All right? I'm hooked. Way better than a hospital. Okay? You see the hospital beds go up and down. Worst mattresses ever. Most uncomfortable beds on the planet. Could not wait to get home to my ghost bed and jack that thing all the way up. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today and pair a mattress with an adjustable base and you're going to get 40% off. You want to throw some pillows and sheets in there? Congratulations, 40% off. If you just want to get singular items there, 30% off when you go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today, where as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. I almost forgot. Come on, Ross. You're better than that. 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest. If you have decent credit, where you can bundle those deals together and walk out of there with a brand new bedroom set for about $35-$38 a month, go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. Next up, secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/drinkingbros, where you can get an extra 3 months free. Protect your digital butthole, kids. Look, they've been with us forever. I've had them forever. Man, it's just been in the background of everything that I own. iPads, my iPhone, and my 10-year-old laptop, which is soon to be replaced, according to Giorgio. We'll see. I don't believe in Steve Jobs. However, I do believe in expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. This is where you can go online, and it's like using a smartphone without a protective case. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine, but all it takes is one accidental drop on the concrete, and it'll make you wish you had protected yourself. You're looking out for hackers here. It's an invisible system, lives behind enemy lines, and will stop people from hacking your information. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, in cafes, hotels, airports, wherever you're at, your data is not secure. You're signing a bunch of things, accepting cookies you shouldn't be doing, and you can feel like a child on Halloween. Don't eat the cookies. Don't eat the cookies there. It doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone. Just some cheap hardware, and a smart 12-year-old could do it. Not me, but a smart one could. Your data is valuable. Hackers can often make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal information on the dark web. Again, I've had this forever. It's a one-and-done stitch. You buy it, you leave it on in the background of all your devices, and you don't think about it. It's just been on auto pay forever. You fire up the app, click one button, boom, you're protected. And like I said, it works on all your devices. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. That is expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/drinkingbros. Thanks, Chad. For you, when you got home, how do you assimilate back to normal life after what you saw for 10 days over there? How do you go back into the real world and you're like, well, got to get up, start the day and do normal shit again and forget what all happened there and the list and everything else?
The reason I came back and we did it 10 days, I came back at day 12. It was because my daughter was getting married. So I flew straight from there to my daughter's wedding. And you know, my daughter's listening, but she's probably not. She don't listen. but if she was, you know, she's like super, you know, she was like bridezilla. And I'm like, immediately I go back to the way I was like when I was deploying to Afghanistan, it was 8 times before. I'm like you have no contact to what's important. Like you cared about like if these chairs are sitting a certain way and like people were dying, like, you know? And so like my mind went back there and I had to, luckily I'm older and more mature now. And I'm like, okay, I'm thankful my daughter doesn't have to carry that burden of that and knowing that. I'm thankful she, I'm glad that the most important thing in the world to her is that the bridesmaid's dresses are the match. Like,
not that the butter knife was on the wrong side of the plate.
Yeah. So, I mean, like at first kind of caught myself going back there and being irritable and thinking nobody has any contacts and a bunch of spoiled, pampered Americans. And because I was there once at one point in my life and it was pretty bad to like, you know what? I'm thankful my family doesn't, you know, they don't have to know that. And then,
well, that's kind of the point, right? Yeah. So the reason we do this shit is so they don't have to, but it does. I mean, you know, it wears on you when you experience that shit and you come home and they try to tell the story and it's like, that's not what the fuck happened. And I don't mean church and shit up for Hollywood. I'm talking about the government taking credit for shit that NGOs did and shit like that.
They're claiming out numbers.
Yeah.
The State Department claimed all the numbers that we got, everyone that we got out, they're claiming our numbers, which, you know, it'd be nice if I'd be happy if they claimed the numbers, if they helped us, that worked against us. If we worked together, like I would have no problem with that. I don't care for sharing credit with anyone that wants to share the load.
It's probably not entirely nefarious. It's probably not a widespread conspiracy. It's just, these people are incompetent. And they don't want to be shown up by somebody that actually knows what they're doing, right? But at the end of the day, the guy holding the door open and bees are flying in, does it matter if he's doing it on purpose or not? No. Right. You smack that motherfucker in the face and close the door.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of appetite for that. The American media is terrified to speak out about this.
And when I say consequence, I don't mean legal consequence. Consequence of being exposed and called out and challenged, there's no consequences at all.
Well, I think what's probably going on there is also so ugly that they don't want to keep throwing that up on the news every single night with David Muir. Yeah. You know, same thing with this Ghislaine fucking trial, whatever you want to call it, right?
Do you think they would if President Trump was still in office?
Oh, yeah.
They wouldn't be tired of it.
But it's not televised. it's the biggest trial in, you know, years and years and years. But I think it's the same content. It's about grooming younger girls and all that other shit. And I think that's not palatable where it's just like, all right, great. We'll keep that out of there. Yeah. Same with what's going on in Afghanistan. We're going to keep that out of there. Let's focus on the other shit. Also, let's face it. It helps the presidents. And I think that's kind of where we're at with the American media. you want to think Fox is different or something like that, but they're not.
Oh, I don't care about Fox. Or
I don't either. I don't care about any of the news outlets whatsoever. No. You know, I watch all of them to try to get some morsel of information and try to cobble together what is really the truth.
Yeah.
But
well, we're pretty fortunate to be able to juxtapose what we're hearing in the media from what we're hearing from people who are actually standing there right now, which is we've been fortunate enough to be able to share that shit on the show as well. But even us, like we get censored so frequently for the weirdest shit. Like you can tell on the monetization, and you can see it on Sagar and Yeti on his platform as well. Pretty much any time he brings up something that's revelatory about the administration or something about China, it gets demonetized.
Yeah.
And that might, oh, fucking, you're not getting paid for it, boo-hoo, whatever. No, demonetization in the YouTube algorithm means it's not going to get seen as much because they're going to promote things that are monetized more because they're making money on that shit. Right. That's how the algorithm works. So they're doing that intentionally and hiding behind community standards when they're just censoring people. That's it.
Yeah, my Instagram gets, my Twitter's, they pretty much killed it, but
same.
My Instagram is so essential. Last week I put a Will over there put a little clip up of me being interviewed by Laura Trump, and we're talking about young guys like me when I joined the military out of high school. That's what we're talking about. That's what the clip was about, because it was Laura Trump. Like, you know, it's been like 10 days now, we're still fighting with my Instagram account.
Yes.
And
it's going to keep going on. Yeah. We're idiots to think that it's ever going to change. But yeah, it's shocking to see where you're just like, all right, great.
Yeah.
What can we do? You want to tell us what we can actually do or what we can't? Yeah.
If they would give you a set of rules, at least we could abide by them.
Yeah. But they change every day. The goalpost moves and you don't know why.
Well, ultimately you have to, decentralize things, right? That's what happens. The counteraction to federalism is, right, or I'm sorry, the counteraction to like a strong central government is federalism, where states get more rights. But that's the case in media as well. And Sagar's doing it to some degree, but he's still on YouTube. But leaving institutions and taking what's valuable from them elsewhere, right? And you're seeing it now. CNN's shedding personalities, you know, like it's a fucking snakeskin in the summertime. And it's going to continue going, by the way. There's more people at CNN are going to get fired soon.
Well, they're moving to an app as well where... Yeah. That's kind of the end, where it's just like, great, we can't afford these ad rates anymore. So we're out of here, and that's all, folks.
But the only way this shit works is if a critical mass of people get involved in it, which means that you assholes that listen to this stuff have to share it with people, like physically share it with people. I don't mean share it on your social media. I mean tell other people in your life about it. Tell them about Save Our Allies and Sagar and Yeti show with Crystal Ball and our show and shit like that are actually giving you real information. You have to share it physically with other people.
Yep.
Right. That's the only way that's going to work.
And we're the ones doing interviews with people who are actually there. Mm. So we're not just telling third hand stories where it's just like, oh yeah, this is a telephone. A friend of a friend I know was over there. And
we
wanted to have you on.
This is one of the largest. This is actually the largest privately run rescue operation in the history of humanity. Ever, right? And how many times have you been on Fox or CNN?
Yeah, three times on Fox.
Yeah,
and it'd be a bunch of Newsmax, but that was all during initial.
Yeah,
that's when it was hot. Like the initial 2 weeks.
Now that all these dicks have been exposed for being shitbags in the government, nobody wants to talk to this guy anymore. All of a sudden,
And you know, people. One of the questions we got to ask: okay, we had about 15,000 to 17,000 people out. How many Americans, right? The truth is, we got about 130 Americans. That's it. Like the Iran hostage thing. How big a deal that was?
It was a five.
It was 75.
Oh, 75 people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But how big of a deal was that? Like it was.
It was big enough deal that Jimmy Carter didn't get reelected.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought you meant when Obama dropped off the billions in cash. Wasn't that four or five?
Okay. That was five people. Yeah.
Five. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, like the Iran. Big hostage thing. I mean, it was in the news every day for like 7 months or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so like a private group going to rescue 130 Americans plus all the other Afghans. It's like we're second to the United States military and by far the first when it comes to vetted individuals.
Yeah.
No one
really cares.
Based on the numbers they're claiming and your total numbers, that means about a quarter of the people that have been pulled out belong to you.
Yeah.
Which means at least a quarter of them have been vetted, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is better than zero, I guess.
If we could just get them all to the States.
Yeah.
Aziz, by the way, he was the first one we got out. We did get Aziz and his wife and kids out, my interpreter. That's where all this started. But that person, and I remember when I seen him the first time, you know, going there at the humanitarian center and put my arms around him. We both start crying, and then his kids came up, and they called me Uncle Chad, because they called me Uncle Chad. And then I start crying again, and it was just so cool. But I told him, like, man, Aziz, like, all these people, like, these thousands of people at that time, there was about 8,000 people there. They're all here because of you, man, because you're such an amazing human being, and he saved my life multiple times. Like, he's such amazing that you started this. And I really believe that, like, because he was such an incredible person, that was the spark that ignited the fuse that all of us got engaged to do this. And he's still stuck in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, he's still stuck there?
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. With his family?
With his family, yeah.
Are they at least safe?
They're safe. They're safe, okay. Yeah. And I'm thankful for that. But
it's an ongoing expense. Like, if you go to Black Rifle's page and look for Wally Tasleem, Tasleem, on their YouTube, you'll see his It's Who We Are, and he was a special operations commander.
Oh yeah,
right. And we brought him over here and blah blah blah. But those people come here and immediately start producing for this country.
For
right?
sure.
Like, immediately. But right now it's an expense. A big one. It's a big expense. And you know, it's not going away. That expense isn't going away until the government starts cooperating.
Yeah.
And they're running these resettlement programs right now. And for whom?
That's a cash cow for people to have in their pocket.
Wait, yeah.
How many billion dollars is it?
Oh, a lot. A lot of billions of dollars.
I heard $65 billion. Yeah. And then I was excited about it. Then the Obamas, the Clintons, and the Bushes all jumped on board.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Clinton Foundation's involved now. Mm. And you know, I talked to these. I was just Sunday. I was with a group of Afghan SIVs that were here. And these were actually some of the good ones. And they're getting the government a lot. $1,500 per person, which you can't, what can you do with $1,500, right? But for resettlement per person. But as they go to these organizations, the organization gets to determine what to do with that $1,500. So they're giving these people $40 a person and keeping the rest for administrative costs. Like, people are already lining up pockets with this.
It's already started.
It's already,
of course. That's what it all comes down to, as always.
It's disgusting. I mean, I hope in the end, maybe a new Congress or some people go to jail for it.
Well, we'll see.
Good luck with that.
I mean, I can hope.
Yeah, yeah, we can all hope.
If you ever want to get mad in your free time, look up something called MVM Inc.
Yeah.
And the Southwest Key Program.
Okay.
Right? They're doing exactly what you're talking about, but for Mexican immigrants, mostly primarily Mexican immigrants, and all juveniles. They're all juveniles. Like, fucking people getting raped. They're embezzling billions, not millions, billions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's wild. And the New York Times actually did a piece about it in 2019. Nobody's done a fucking thing about it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my buddy from that's a CBP guy sends me license plates all the time that they see running in and out of there. It's MBM Inc. in Southwest Key constantly. Fucking, they're basically trafficking kids.
And they won't do anything about it.
No, no one's going to do shit about it. I mean, at some point, somebody's going to do something about it, right?
Yeah.
You know what, though? Everything that has USG attached to it has just been crap. But over this, it's made me kind of bitter towards our government and you know, angry, obviously, and bitter. And I was sitting in Abu Dhabi at their operations center, and I'm in this room, amazing, like, conference room, everything there is extravagant. And they got these the secretary or minister of interiors there, a couple of generals, and about 20 lawyers, and we were having this briefing. And I never thought I'd do this in my life, but I had to stand up in front of this room and apologize for our country. And I know I'm a very proud patriot. And
sure.
I apologize for our country for putting them in this position. And I had to thank them, rightfully to deserve the thanks, for rescuing, you know, over 100 Americans when our government wouldn't, and rescuing those people and letting us, supporting us. And in that moment, I remember thinking, like, how mad I was at the government and how embarrassed I was at our government. But then also, like, the reason we were there doing operation is because the American people stepped up to do this effort at Save Our Allies. And that's not just me and Tim and Nick and the guys and Sarah. That's, like, the response for donors. Mm. We raised like $2 million in 3 months. Like, people just stepped up, and as Americans. So when the government does, you know, crappy programs like that, that people that get corrupted and people line their pockets. And the end of the day, the American people did the right thing. And it really gave me a hope in our country again, because I was losing it. It gave me hope to see people step up like that.
Well, that's more than hope. That's a game plan. This is what I talk about on this show and American Party all the time. The government is fucked. And if you don't believe me, go to the DMV today. Yeah. It's incompetent. And the best thing we can do is try to box it out. If you see your neighbors having a problem, you go fix it before the government comes in and spends 10 times more and takes some of your liberty away to do so.
Yeah.
Right. We have to start fixing our own fucking problems and boxing the government out. So the hope you see hope in the power, I guess, collective power of the American population. I see a game plan. And I'm not talking about fucking insurrection and violent overthrows. I'm talking about you fucking do shit before the government has a chance to.
Yep.
Right?
Stop them. That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and donate to the organizations that are actually helping people out in the world, because the government is not going to. Now is the point in the show we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
Steve Toth. He's a Texas state legislator here.
Mm-hmm.
Before he was a Texas state legislator, when I reached my lowest point and made a decision that my family would be sad without me, but they'd be better off, and I almost became another veteran suicide statistic. He stepped into my life and mentored me and helped carry me through that. Not a veteran, not a fellow MMA fighter or anything like that. Just some guy in my community at my local church that stepped in and mentored me and helped me get out of that. And I wouldn't be sitting in his chair alive today if it wasn't for him.
Awesome.
And I wouldn't be able to do the work that we do at Mighty Oaks or Save Our Allies if not for him.
Cheers. Well, obviously, SaveOurAllies.org is one of your charities. Tell people where they can find the other one.
Yeah, MightyOaksFoundation.org. For Mighty Oaks Foundation, we do free veterans programs. I do resiliency events, and we do recovery events around the country. We do about 1,000 veterans per year, and active duty service members come for a week-long intervention camp. And then we do life with them afterwards. And then resiliency, I go to base around the world and speak to our troops. And we do about $4 million a year in programming there, all for free to our troops. We even pay for travel. So MightyOaksPrograms.org and then SaveOurAllies.org. Right now at Save Our Allies, I know we mentioned it today, but we are currently right now not doing a campaign fundraiser. We are in active rescue for 55 Americans. It's going to cost us about $300,000 to get them out.
Okay.
Before I got on the show, we're down to, we still need $108,000. And this is like every minute counts. So I donated my personally today.
Yeah.
So
look, if you're out there and you believe in the cause, go to SaveOurAllies.org. Chad, thanks for coming on the show today. Oh, we greatly appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you, guys.
For D'Anthony Holloway, Chad Robichaux, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters' 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.